Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest today is Mike Harris. Mike's a man with a long track record. If you're living a life that's full and you're an intelligent person who with a can-do attitude, and people actually don't try and destroy you before you go grow to fruition, you will look back on your track record full of success after success in business, in politics, and now in media, as Mike has had. And Mike, I'd like to welcome you to the program with my great honor and privilege and various other nice adjectives.
Well, Vinny, thank you. The honor and the privilege is mine. I'm just delighted that you invited me to be your guest, and thanks for having me.
Well, we have a good 2 hours with you today, so let's not waste it. We had a number of different issues that we wanted to bring up that are buzzing around your head at the moment, namely the Federal Reserve fraud and the U.S. economy in its state at the moment.
Well, that is, it's about as open-ended, as nebulous a question as you can ask. Would you like to narrow it down a little bit for me? Give me a hand here. What do your listeners want to hear about?
Well, the thing for me is that the Fed has just released QE3 with $40 billion a month of mortgage-backed securities that they're planning on purchasing. And also we've had revealed on the show that they are going to be putting that $40 billion per month into derivatives and expand it and things of that nature. And we are also aware that now prices of virtually everything in the United States is starting to skyrocket, and some are saying that this could be the start of hyperinflation for the United States.
Well, that is the fear that we all have here in the USA. And the other fear is that the other economies of the world, you know, Russia, China, the BRIC nations, are going to decouple from the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. And when that happens, that's going to be the other shoe falling, and you're going to see prices of the U.S. just for basic commodities go through the roof. So, but anyway, the Federal Reserve, let's talk about this. I mean, this is really a constitutionally mandated function of Congress that they outsourced. And they outsourced this in 1913. It's coming up for renewal next year. And it's time that American people made their will known that we don't want the Federal Reserve. We think the Federal Reserve is a fraud. We think the Federal Reserve has failed at its mandate. And you look at what they were supposed to do. They were supposed to preserve the value of the dollar, and they were supposed to prevent the boom and bust cycle. The dollar's lost 97% of its value since the Federal Reserve started managing it. And the boom and bust cycle has been a lot of booms and a lot more bust, it seems. We've in my lifetime, we've had three great scams in the last 30 years. You know, there's scams against the American people. And the first one was the SNL debacle. And you look at that, and really what that was a transfer of wealth from people who had worked hard, made money, invested wisely, and then they changed the tax code. And what was a good investment a year ago now is a lousy investment. People lost tons of money on it, but other people made tons of money on it. So that was the first one. The second big scam that happened to the American people was the dot-com bubble. And that was a classic boiler room pump and dump stock scheme. We've got these companies that have no revenue, and they're trading at 180 times what their invested capital was. And everybody got out, made money, but the people left holding the bag. Who was the people who were left holding the bag? Well, the institutional investors. Who is that? That's your pension plans. That's CalPERS. That's all of these things. Now these organizations, your firemen, your policemen, your teachers' unions, all of these pension plans now are underfunded because they lost so much money. And the third one we look at here is this this issue here with this mortgage boom bust fraud that's been going on, where you look at the people who in good faith signed loan documents to buy a house. Well, you're finding fraud in the documents themselves. You know, people were defrauded. There was excess fees. There were a number of things going on. Valuations were skewed. You had appraisers coming in and giving ridiculous appraisals for houses that were, you know, 50%, 100% over their value. You had the securitization of those where they were bundled. They're bundling thousands of mortgages together. They were making it into a security. They were slicing those securities up, rating them as AAA when really they were D-minus type securities. They were selling them as AAA. And the investors, again, the pension profit-sharing plans were buying them. And everybody lost money on this except the banks. Now, all of this has gone on. There's been so much happening. But have you seen anybody get arrested? Have you seen any bankers in handcuffs being perp-walked out of the building? No, nobody has. So justice delayed is justice denied, and that's what's going on in this country, and that's really why so many people are hurting. You know, recently since 2007, 2008, when that one happened, but there's just a number of issues that have been done. You can't examine any issue in isolation. There's always a link to something else that happened in the past.
Well, let's think about this. We've got all these connections with the Federal Reserve, the economy, and of course the Federal Reserve is owned by a number of other major corporate banks. I want to know, how are the shareholders and the actual companies that own the Federal Reserve doing in the global economy? Are they doing as well?
Well, they're not missing any meals, let's just say that. And none of the shareholders for the big to fail banks have lost a dime. And it's my premise that if a bank is too big to fail, it's too big to allow it to survive, because it becomes a national security risk. If you look at your economy as a national security asset, and a bank is too big to fail, to where the taxpayers have to come in and intervene and deal with the problem of bad banking decisions that were made, and the taxpayers have to pay for that, that is a risk to national security, because it harms the entire country and everyone in the country, which, again, it goes back. This is another failure of government.
Well, is government anything but failure in the 20th century? Has anything actually improved, or has government simply grown and grown worse?
Well, you know, we were warned in 1959 by then President Dwight D. Eisenhower that we had this thing called a military-industrial complex. And nobody knew what it was, and nobody knew what he was talking about at the time. I was just a child. But he warned us about this. And then his successor, who came in, John Kennedy, he went to make some true monetary reforms and some true reforms in how the U.S. was structured, how the U.S. was going to do business. And we see the result of that. You know, he was murdered November 22nd, 1963. And since then, it's been a downward spiral. You know, it's my contention, my belief. Can I prove it? No, I wasn't part of the, I wasn't an old enough child at the time. I was in fourth grade when JFK was killed. But I look at this in retrospect and I think to myself, Lyndon Johnson, he had his hands on this. George H.W. Bush had his hands on this. If you read Professor Jim Fetzer's work, he can show you pictures of George H.W. Bush in Daley Plaza the day of the murder, you know, standing on the steps of the book repository there. And, you know, these are the guys who are still kicking around, who've never let go. And we've had this shadow government that since the Kennedy murder, when they really showed themselves for the first time, that's been out there, that's been functioning, that has been hiding under the elected government. But the shadow government really is where the power is. And the JFK murder was not an isolated incident. I want to remind people that his brother Robert was killed. You know, when he was running in 1968, he was going to run against Richard Nixon. He just won the California primary. He was shot dead in the kitchen. There was 11 shots fired. Sirhan Sirhan's gun only held 8. So you look at this and you think, something's going on. You look at who else has been killed. You look at George Wallace, who ran in 68 as well. He was going to run for president. He was shot. He was crippled, paralyzed, never ran again. Martin Luther King was assassinated. They were going after anybody who threatened their power structure. And that is a criminal cabal that has taken over and infected this country like a cancer. And it's not going to get any better until we the people stand up and do something. There ain't no Superman, folks. It's up to you and me, we the people. And these things happen. And the perpetrators for all of these crimes go all the way up to 9/11. They've never been arrested. No one's ever been punished for any of this. So you think there's not a shadow government? There's a shadow government. And here's the footprints they've left in the sand. So the sands of time, let's just say that.
Well, there's a trail. And you've heard about the fractal universe theory, I take it?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Because I have a theory called fractal scumbaggery.
So, okay. Well, please explain.
Well, in the fractal universe, each thing that you look at, whether it be a galaxy or a human cell or whatever, it seems to repeat the pattern over and over again and keep expanding. So whichever thing you choose to look into, you'll find more than you can even handle. And fractal scumbaggery is you look into a scumbag who's engaging in scumbaggery, so let's say assassinations or financial terrorism or drug running of a major thing like a CIA or involved in many different methodologies and different organizations. You look into that one person or you look into that one incident and it starts to expand again and again and again and make all these other connections so that it matters not which rabbit hole or which direction you start looking into. You will find more scumbaggery the deeper you look, and it's infinite.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. And if we can go back to the U.S. economy again, you look at the current situation the U.S. is in. We've got, you know, we have depression-level unemployment in the U.S. Our government tells us it's in the 8.2% or so. They're lying. They've manipulated the numbers. They change the metrics. They change how their methodology of measuring unemployment to where people who give up and quit looking no longer count. Even though they're not working, they're no longer looking, so therefore they're not unemployed. It's a semantic game playing. But you look at these things and you look at the source of this. How did the U.S. become deindustrialized? If you go back to the 1992 election when it was George H.W. Bush running against Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton won. There was a third candidate there, a guy named Ross Perot. And Ross Perot was the guy who was famous for saying, if you sign NAFTA and if you sign GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariff, that giant sucking sound you hear is going to be U.S. jobs leaving the country. And everybody laughed at Perot and made fun of him. But you know what? Ross Perot was right. And they signed GATT and NAFTA in 1995. And you have to realize that from the time you implement a policy until you see the full effect of it, it may take some time. There's going to be a delay in there between it, the time it's implemented to the time you see the full effect. Well, this current downturn where we have, you know, 22%, 23% effective un or underemployment, it's taken that much time for this thing to manifest fully. And the reason that what the Federal Reserve is doing now to jumpstart the economy is not working is because those jobs aren't here anymore. You know, if we did a massive cash infusion, a jumpstart, another TARP, another, you know, $1 trillion to help jumpstart the economy, it's not going to help the American worker, but China's going to do great. And China has done great with these stimulus packages because the jobs aren't here. They're now over there. So you have to ask yourself the question, we did this to ourselves. How do we rectify this now? What possibly can we do to bring manufacturing back to the U.S.?
What can we do? Because you've had, 30-plus years in manufacturing. Your knowledge of that industry and particularly the offshoring of it must be exquisite.
Well, I have, and what I would suggest, and I would say that we need to look at the U.S. First of all, let's get rid of the IRS. Let's stop this nonsense of taxing income. It's not constitutional. They've finessed some ways around it, but let's get rid of the IRS because we don't need the IRS. Let's put the IRS to work on Wall Street and regulate those guys. If they need a new job, let's let them go bedevil Wall Street and keep Wall Street honest and apply the resources where they can do the American people some good. But I think the solution might be to put a 45% import tariff on anything not manufactured in the USA. And that is if companies like General Electric or Apple Computer or General Motors or Hyundai or Toyota or anybody who makes products overseas to import and sell into the U.S., they have to pay a 45% fee on the cost of goods sold at the gate. And that would, I think, would motivate a lot of manufacturers to try to move manufacturing back to the USA and get American workers back to work. Then you take the proceeds from that and you use that instead of these income taxes that they charge individuals. And if there's still a budget deficit, let's quit playing with the tax code altogether. Let's change our country from a nation of consumers, which we became because of our tax code. Let's change it to a nation of savers. So let's change how we tax people. Let's don't tax what you earn. Let's tax what you spend. So perhaps maybe an 8% or maybe a 10% national sales tax. That way, everybody who spends money, including the massive underground economy that doesn't get taxed, everyone then has skin in the game. So, I hear your music.
It's always an inconvenient time when you're listening to somebody who's gotten some knowledge, isn't it? We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Mike Harris. He's an author at veteranstoday.com/author/Harris and also a host at republicbroadcasting.org on the B program channel. We'll be right back after the break.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We're broadcasting 5 days a week. There are AM, FM affiliates all across America and a number of different internet radio stations in the Uber Kingdom who rebroadcast the show, including TNS Radio. And in New Zealand, we have Rush FM in Hamilton and iFinity FM in Southland. So thank you all very much for tuning in. My special guest today from Veterans Today, who has a show on Republic Broadcasting, is Mike Harris. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, Vinny. Thanks for having me once again. Thank you and your listeners for indulging me with this very valuable time.
Mm. Well, valuable time. I remember one time a socialist told me that the source of all wealth is work and labor, somebody actually making something and using their own elbow grease and whatever other talents or skills or relative things that they have to offer. That's where real wealth comes from. And I've seen this this show grow as a method of knowledge wealth creation in a way, and you're simply contributing.
Well, I'll do my level best. And, you know, over the break, you and I were talking a bit about something, and you look at the U.S., you look at the U.S. economy right now, and one of the conclusions that I've come to is since we've deindustrialized ourselves, really the only industries left in the U.S., one of them is financial services. And that really doesn't create anything. All it does is shuffle money around from one pocket to the next, and you hope that you have an edge or some sort of an advantage over someone else. It's a zero-sum game. You know, half the people will win, half the people will lose. And it seems that, like, we based our economy on criminality these days. And you just, as what you call scumbaggery, it just seems to be rampant everywhere. That it seems that America has lost its moral compass. And that, to me, is a great tragedy. And it's something that we, the people, need to do. We need to fix this. And we need to hold our elected officials accountable. And we need to let them know that we're not happy with them, and we will not keep them employed as elected officials unless they get their act together pretty quick.
The difficulty is, how do you fire somebody who is your boss?
Well, that's the question, too. And you look at the complication of the U.S. electoral system right now. We've, in the last 20 years, we've had a couple of changes in how we've run our elections. We had the McCain-Feingold law that was passed, which allows people, see, in the past, if you lived in Iowa and you were running for Congress, only people from Iowa could give you money. So if you lived in New York and you wanted to influence a race in Iowa, it didn't happen. But McCain-Feingold changed all that so that if you're running for a race in Iowa and there's a group in New York, for instance, that wants to influence your race, and they want to give you money, that's great. Or if they don't like you because you're standing up for the people of Iowa and doing your job, they can give your opponent money. You know, you look at that and say, wow, we have now, nobody explained how McCain-Feingold really works to the people, but that's how it works. You look at the fact, and you can track this, is available information, it's public domain, that 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. So you look at how the influence of money has on elections and how and why the people's voice is no longer heard. It's these historical things that people forget about. They say, oh, McCain-Feingold, campaign finance reform, this is wonderful. Well, it didn't live up to its promises. In fact, it failed at its promises, unless the promise was to disenfranchise the people of the district which that congressman or senator lives in. And then, in which case, it was a fraud on the people. And the people were lied to and deceived for supporting something that did not benefit their best interest.
Well, can I ask you something? You've seen these frauds be perpetrated for a number of years. Have you actually seen them do any different frauds, or are they all one and the same scam, just people can't wake up for it or can't actually punish them for it?
Well, how do I say this? All mammals are animals, but not all mammals are alike. All frauds are frauds, but they're not all alike. So some of them, they promise things that they can't deliver. That's the essence to most fraud. And we don't know what it's going to be. Like I said, we gave the example of NAFTA and GATT. They promised that we were just going to take our low-paying, low-wage manufacturing jobs and ship them overseas, and we were all going to become knowledge workers, and we were going to become engineers and software designers and these things. Well, that didn't happen either, because now the software is designed in India by people who work for a tenth of the price that an American software engineer will work. It was all a big lie, and that's really the basis of all fraud. And, how do you discern the effect that something is going to have before it's implemented? And we're never given the truth. We're never shown. We're shown a model, but the model we're shown is based on false assumptions. And that's and people try to make informed decisions. Well, the hardest part of making an informed decision is being informed. And people don't have the access to some of these bills that Congress passes in advance to even do the homework on them. The Obamacare bill was a prime example. It was 2,400 pages. And if you want to know what it says, you have to pass it first. How is this legislating? You know, this is going to be the greatest debacle known to the U.S. It's going to kill the U.S. economy. It's going to kill the U.S. as a country, this Obamacare thing, because you can't add 80 million more people to the healthcare rolls and save money. So from the get-go, there's lies that are told. And how do we discern who's telling the truth and who isn't? Because these contests that they get into to pass bills, and they swap and they trade and they give bribes. You know, you had the the Cornhusker kickback, and you had the Louisiana Purchase, and you had all these special deals that influential senators and congressmen cut in exchange for their support for something they knew was no good. You know, how do we get to the bottom of this? It's my contention that the United States needs complete regime change in our government. We really do. I mean, every one of these SOBs needs to be kicked to the curb and sent home packing and stripped of their pension benefits, of every benefit that they've ever received out of there. And all of their ill-gotten gain needs to be what's called in the U.S. There's a legal term called the clawback. And we need to claw back all this money from these guys, both inside of government and those who are outside of government. And we need to bring morality back into this. And really, you know, politics is supposed to be the most noble of public service, because you're doing for the people what the people cannot do for themselves. And you are entrusted with the public trust. And these people we have now who are allegedly serving us violate that public trust on a daily basis in order to enrich themselves or to hang on to their position in Congress. And they do all sorts of things, and they're really not worthy of the job. And I could say the same for the two presidential candidates we're currently dealing with.
Now, the debate between Obama and Romney, I have not been able to watch the debate in full, but the media is going on and on and on about it. And as if there's a fracking choice.
Well, there isn't. And the one thing that overwhelmingly struck me about the debate and how the two candidates were positioning themselves: number one, they're not addressing the major issues that are affecting the country. They're not addressing the financial malaise that's going on in this country. They haven't addressed that at all. They've not addressed criminality that's going on in this country on a rampant basis. They're avoiding that. What I saw them both doing was protecting the status quo from different vantage points. That's all they were doing. I'm going to protect it from the left, and Romney's going to protect it from the right, but we're both going to protect the socialist status quo. And like it or not, socialism is growing in the USA. We're becoming more of a socialized country every day, in spite of what the people want. You know, the American people don't want this. They want government to get out of our way, let us stand or fall based upon our own effort, our own hard work, our own merit. But we're being driven into this funnel of socialism, where we're becoming more of a socialist country every day, and we're looking more and more like the former Soviet Union every passing day.
And it has actually been revealed, even in mainstream sources, that the reason why America is starting to look like communist Russia is because they actually hired the former KGB heads who set up the communist system of Russia to come to America to set up theirs.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's an excellent point, and that's something that I've had a bit of a hard-on about for a while, and that is Janet Napolitano, former governor of my state of Arizona, who I sought to run against in 2006 when I ran for governor of the state. She hired a guy named Eric Mueller to help her structure the Department of Homeland Security. Now, if anyone knows who Eric Mueller is, he was the head of the East German Stasi, which was the most repressive, most surveillance-intense, draconian police state that has ever been devised by mankind. And that is who she brought on board as her advisor to assist her in structuring our Department of Homeland Security. Somehow I'm offended by that. In fact, I'm pissed. But, you know, who am I? I'm just some little schlub out here. What can I do? And it's not just one guy what you could do, but it's all of us. We all have to become inspired, compelled enough to want to change this system that we have no control over, that we were born into. I mean, I didn't create the Federal Reserve. I was born, the Federal Reserve was already in existence. I have to live with this. But what I can do is identify their weak points, and I can start attacking those weak points. And I can start not cooperating with the system they've structured it. I can start being sand in the gears. And I can start, I can move my money from a big bank, one of the big six like B of A or Wells Fargo or Chase. I can take my money out of that bank and I can move it into maybe a local credit union where it stays in my community. I can not shop at chain stores. I can not go to Walmart. I can shop at the local Ace Hardware.
You've got a little bit of wind on your mic there, Mike.
Yeah, yes, I do. I decided to sit outside since it was such a nice day, and what happens? The wind kicks up. So, you know, par for the course. If something can go wrong, it will at the worst possible time. I ask the indulgence of your audience to forgive me. It seems to have passed.
Yeah, it's no longer Murphy's Law. It's Obama's Law.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, we could, I mean, I can pick holes in this thing all day long. The bottom line is the people of this country have got to get up off their dead butts and start participating, because it's going to affect you sooner or later. If you look at what's going on in Greece, you look at the massive demonstrations, you look at what's going on in Spain, massive demonstrations. I'm sorry, folks, but that's coming to a neighborhood near you really soon. And if the BRIC nations are successful in dropping the dollar as the world's reserve currency, it's going to happen before you know it. And then you're going to be saying, oh, my goodness, how did we get here? What happened? And then the police state is going to clamp down, and we're going to have a really, really ugly situation in this country that I hope to avoid.
Can I ask you as well, I mean, from your personal experience, have you got a positive outlook, seeing the things you've seen, knowing the things you know?
Well, I think that there's nothing outside of our control that we can't fix or change. But people have to engage on a massive basis. And, you know, really, if you look at the math of what it takes to hit critical mass on something, we need 3% of the U.S. population, 3% out of 315 million people. We need about 10 million people to roll up their sleeves and want to go to work and change this country into something better than what it is today. That's all we need, only 10 million, 3%. And we can move the world.
I'm not sure if that answers the question, because 3% of the population is not easy by any means. I mean, even the Green Party and Cynthia McKinney, what do they get? 0.2% of the voter turnout. So it's like Gilbert Griffin said to me, is that he's an old guy now and he's been working really, really hard, and you just wish that more and more would be getting accomplished than it currently is. But if you look back and you look at your track record and you look at how different things are in a positive way, this movement, these radio stations and things like that, even so much as a decade ago, didn't exist.
Well, you're right. They didn't. And we're starting to get that critical mass. Are we there yet? No, we're not there yet. We have a long way to go, but we can get there. And if people give up hope and fall into despair, then we're screwed. But we've got to keep optimistic. You know, I mean, I have my radio show is on. I'm on from 6 to 8 Pacific time in the USA. I get up at 4:30 in the morning, 5 days a week, to do my show. And I do it for the good of the people.
Indeed. As I do this as well, we're definitely not doing it for ourselves, are we, Mike? Because I don't know about you, but I took one hell of a pay cut to take this job.
No, I do this one for free, and there's an advantage in that too, because when you do it for free, they can't buy your influence.
That's right. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Ladies. broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. It's a show when we talk about scumbaggery and our very special business of drug cartels every single day, 5 days a week, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com with the archives of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest today is Mike Harris from Republic Broadcasting and Veterans Today. Welcome back, sir.
Well, thank you so much. It's my pleasure again.
Now, getting into some serious business is what the government seems to do. Okay, I mentioned drug running there. And also, we talked about over the break about creating solutions to these problems and how there is no silver bullet and that all the problems are very complicated. And I was thinking just systematically, how could you work through these interconnected problems and shred them and separate them in a practical way so that they can be eliminated one by one? For example, I would love to eliminate the Fed and the CIA and the Department of Homeland Security because of the fact that they are interconnected and they aren't going to allow the American people to be free. In fact, we'll strive to do the direct opposite every way, every day. But they all support each other, nexused kind of together. So in order to get rid of one, you would have to get rid of them all simultaneously.
Well, you would. And people have to realize that under the Bush-Cheney administration, the CIA, as we remember it, doesn't exist anymore. A lot of the operational aspects of the CIA were, again, outsourced. So we have private contractors who used to be CIA operatives who are now private contractors working for whoever is willing to pay them. That's not a real healthy environment for a free people to have that. And one of the reflections of this you'll see is, you know, the U.S. has used the CIA for decades to meddle in foreign politics, to influence foreign elections, to influence foreign leaders, to do all of these things overseas so that we would have our guy in there instead of their guy. Well, the Cold War has been over now for a while, but these guys are still out there working. What they've done is they've brought the CIA techniques of how to manage elections and how to manipulate people. Those have all been brought to the U.S., and that's what we're dealing with now in our current election cycle, where you have all of these dirty tricks. I mean, dirty tricks in politics did not stop at Watergate, I promise. You know, I lived through it during my own election whenever I ran for governor. I suffered from dirty tricks. They broke into my office. They put spyware on my computers. I even had a what I will call an aggravated assault in front of my house. When someone with a pickup truck tried to run me and the dog down while I was taking them out to go potty, it just happens. And those techniques of interfering in foreign elections are now being used by both parties against their opponents. And that's not how the American people expect elections to be run. But that's what happens because the criminals are in charge of the asylum.
Well, this is true. And I've always said, how are you going to take to court and prosecute somebody who owns the judges?
Well, that's a really difficult issue right there. And we need to find an alternative for that because it's pretty obvious that since the Supreme Court passed the Citizens United decision, which was a landmark decision where corporations are now deemed to be people or persons. And corporations, because they have personhood now, have the right of free speech. In this case, free speech translates into money to spend on elections. So it means that you can be a foreign government, you can be a foreign drug cartel if you wanted to be, and you could form a Delaware corporation, which you could adequately fund through your ill-gotten proceeds, and you could give money to candidates, and no one can ask where the money comes from, what the source is, anything. So I think we're having a little bit of foreign and criminal influence on our elections this cycle. In fact, I would say massive foreign and criminal influence on our elections. And it's really a shame because it further disenfranchises the American people in this democratic process that we're supposed to be enjoying as a free country in the world. And And really, people don't even know it. Everybody knows something's wrong, but nobody can quite put their finger on it. But this is what's wrong. I'm telling you, I've done my homework on this, and me and others. And you know, I've been taken to school by some really great people who have helped educate me and to open my eyes as to what's going on. And that's why I do my radio show. That's why I'm here on your radio show, is to help other people open their eyes as well and to be able to see through what's really happening behind the scenes.
So what is happening truly behind the scenes to your eye? I mean, are we talking about specific players that are involved here who need to be arrested and put away for life or public executions?
I think there are specific players. I think you can look at the Bush crime family, which Mitt Romney has aligned himself with. I think that there is enough right there that there are significant players, always have been. I want to remind the listeners, going back to Iran-Contra scandal under the Reagan administration, that that entire operation was run by George H.W. Bush, who was the former director of the CIA. And if you recall, one of the sources of revenue for Iran-Contra was that they were bringing in cocaine from South America, they were converting it into crack cocaine, and they were selling it into the inner city neighborhoods in East L.A. And they were really abusing our black citizens in this country and really creating drug problems for them, because they were considered to be the least valuable throwaways. Let's get them hooked on this and let's have a revenue source that is free from scrutiny and free from supervision by Congress. And it was a way to subvert the constitutional process. It was criminal then. It's criminal now. And this practice has not stopped. And like I said a few moments ago, what we knew is the CIA has largely been outsourced under Bush and Cheney. And these are our freelancers, privateers, and the same issues are going on then as are going on now. When the Taliban was occupying Afghanistan before the U.S. occupation, heroin production, opium production was at an all-time low. I spoke with Colonel Evgeny Khrushchev, who was the diplomatic liaison to Afghanistan under the Soviet occupation, as well as the diplomatic liaison to Afghanistan under the Russian during the U.S. occupation, and according to his numbers, opium production has gone up 5,000% in Afghanistan under U.S. control. So if we have drug laws in this country and that are supposed to be honored and enforced, why is our government enabling the production of opium and heroin to increase 5,000% under our watch? What's going on here? Something doesn't smell right, does it?
Well, I would refer people to the work of Michael Rupert from thewilderness.com and compvcia.com. And he's exposed that the CIA is involved in enormous amounts of drug running in and out of Afghanistan and other drug producing nations, Colombia, where all these Contras are and all of that sort of thug. And apparently, and this has been supported by Catherine Austin Fitz. I think she might have been the former Treasury Secretary or something of the United States. But they've said that they're pouring in liquid cash into the economy. So they go off, they sell their drugs, and they put their liquid cash into the economy through major corporations that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Because if you're listed on the New York Stock Exchange, apparently you don't have to fill out those transaction receipts for transactions over $10,000. You don't have to explain where your money comes from. And they say it's numbering in about $500 million annually in liquid cash through the economy. So if you wanted to stop the drug running, you would be pulling $500 million worth of liquid cash annually. And that's conservatively
let me correct your numbers, because I think you're a little bit light on the amount of money that is actually going through in drug trade. Globally, the drug trade is about $1.4 trillion per year. That's the global value of what drugs are currently. If you look at the Bank of America, when they bought Wachovia in 1 year, Wachovia laundered $383 billion of drug proceeds. That's one bank, Wachovia, and that they're now a subsidiary of B of A. And this is public record. I didn't make this up. But the global numbers on drug trafficking is about $1.4 trillion per year. And you look at this and how you hit the nail on the head. But the identification of your source of funds, the New York traded companies are exempted. So you can go out and create yourself a bulletin board company out there that's got next to nothing. It's publicly traded. They can trade money back and forth. And that is what one of the sources is for a lot of this campaign funding that's going on. So far this year, just in the presidential election, there's been $600 million invested in this election so far. It's going to top $1 billion. And you look at the other money for the Senate seats, you look at for the House of Representatives, the governorships, the local, the state houses. You know, Newt Gingrich gave a plan back in 1994 about how it would cost $300 million to buy control of the U.S. And Newt Gingrich was right, and that's exactly what they did. And that's one of the reasons that people of this country have been, I will say it again, disenfranchised.
Well, how can you undisenfranchise them? You know, I have very little solutions personally as a radio show host. It would be quite difficult for me to ascertain something that would work. However, I'm very open to possibilities and working through solutions. And there's also other things like the mathematically perfect economy and a number of other things. And after the break, Mike, I'd like to get you to divulge some of your knowledge of what's happening with illegal immigration in the United States and particularly the southern borders around Arizona, where you have been for some time. So Mike Harris, ladies and gentlemen, from Veterans Today and RepublicBroadcasting.org. We will be right back after the break at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Everyone but me, and I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio with my very special guest, Mike Harris. Now, Mike, I wanted to get your take on this as well, because I've seen a number of different articles that frankly have scared the hell out of me. About illegal immigration in the United States, how many people are coming across the border per hour, per day, the enormous problems with the drug cartels, grenade attacks on border towns, and millions of dollars worth of weaponry being seized, this kind of thing. Like, you've got enough weapons being seized in a single seizure to practically start a domestic insurrection, right? How big is this problem?
Well, you've asked a series of questions there, and let's break it down a little bit here, because I'll tell you, I took a year off last year. I went and went out and bought an RV travel trailer, and I went up and I spent the year just taking off. The economy was in the doldrums. There's no jobs to be found anyway, so when you have downtime, take advantage of it, right? So I went up to Oregon, and I was hanging around up there. I was going hiking in the mountains and, going down to the beach and just having a great time. And I got a call from a guy who I met during my campaign for governor, who wanted to run for the sheriff of Pinell County. And Pinell County is not directly a border county. It's one county north of the border. But it is key to the drug traffic and the human traffic that comes across the border, because – It's the intersection of the Interstate 10 and the Interstate 8. And if the drugs or the illegal aliens who are being trafficked can make it to that corridor, they can be anywhere in the country via the interstate highway system within 24 hours. It's a 21-hour trip by car from that intersection to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And so if they could get to there, they're pretty much home free. They're safe. They get in the interstate system, and that's where they go. So anyway, this guy called me up. His name is JT Reddy. He called me. I knew him. You know, he'd been a friend. We'd gotten close after the campaign, and he decided he was going to run for sheriff of Pinell County. So I came down here to work on his campaign. I was going to take a position with his campaign and do my very level best to help him get elected, because I think he had enough steel in his spine to stand up to the cartels and not be corrupted by the corrosive influence that much money has. Well, he was running as a Democrat, unopposed in the primary. And May 2nd, he was murdered by the cartels. Him and his entire family, five people were shot and killed, including a 16-month-old baby girl, which was his wife's granddaughter. One of his wife's daughters, her, the son-in-law, the baby, the wife, and himself were all shot in the left temple. And there were many witnesses. They saw two cars leaving, and the local police branded it as a murder-suicide. When in fact, the signature of the cartels, or one of the signatures, is a shot through the left temple and to kill the entire family. What the murderers did not realize is that there was another teenage girl, a 17-year-old, who was upstairs hiding under the bed. They tried to make it sound like he killed his family and he killed himself. He did not. Not a round was fired out of either of his two personal weapons that he carried. And the news media painted this as a murder-suicide, and it's a fraud. But the border violence is here. It's here in the United States. Now, week before last, in Cochise County, the sheriff down there is a guy named Larry Deaver, who I regard as a friend. And when I was running for governor, he was very supportive. And I have a 13-year-old boy who, at the time I was running for governor, was an 8-year-old boy, you know, 7-year-old boy. And Sheriff Deaver, it was his personal hero. Because you know, the sheriff had a chance to meet with him, interact with him, and you know, just was really good with my son, and really endeared himself to me for being kind to my boy. Sheriff Deaver was killed 2 weeks ago in a one car accident, where there's a technique that's used by various agencies called Boston Brakes, where if you've got an electronic you know, computer in your car that controls your engine, your brakes, everything else, it can be taken over, it can be seized from a distance, and your car can be made to accelerate very rapidly. Well, the black box has been gotten out of Deaver's truck. He was killed, single car accident, no one else on the road. His car accelerated from 27 miles an hour to 62 miles an hour in less than 4 seconds. Sheriff Deaver was murdered, no doubt, by the cartels. He was the last clean, honest sheriff. And what you look for on this, Deaver was also running unopposed in his jurisdiction. He was extremely popular in his county. And now, it was after the primary, it was a week after the primary that he was murdered. So now there's no one who can sign up and have a special election to run against him. So the appointee, who was someone entirely out of left field, is going to run unopposed. And I'll guarantee you that we can find fingerprints to that individual, to the cartels. I'll guarantee it. I've not done the work. I'm not at liberty to speak, because private parties are investigating this, and we will get to the truth of this. We will find out who did this.
Let's hope so, because I've seen so many of these things happen and get ruled suicides by dirty coroners and all of these other fake people who get brought in. And again, it brings back to the apparatus. I mean, you see the similar thing when children get kidnapped by, say, Child Protective Services. You go to the sheriff to go, please, you know, help me get my child back. He's on the take. And then you go to the doctors to try and prove to them that you never hurt your child or anything like that. He's on the take. You go to psychiatrist for the mental anguish and things like that, and they say, oh, don't worry about it, you know, just trust the authority. She's on the take. So you've got this whole apparatus where everybody you would go to for help is already the one messing you up, or part of it.
Well, you have to look at this and realize that these criminals out there have studied our system for a long time and have identified where the weaknesses and where the choke points are. And they've managed to put their people in there. But the message I want to get to the American people, and really the people worldwide, is that the drug war is here. It's home. It's in America. I'm currently located in Vehicle Valley, which is one of the primary drug cartel corridors within the U.S. And I'm out here to watch and observe. And the human trafficking, you see, I don't really blame the Mexican people for wanting to come here, because their country is such a dung heap. It just is. But I also blame them because they're coming here and they're bringing with them the things they're fleeing from. They're bringing them into my country, and they're corrupting my country. They're corrupting the culture of my country. And they're having a terrible effect on American workers, and that is they're suppressing wages. You know, when I was a kid, my first job, I was 14 years old. I got a job as a dishwasher. I was making 90 cents an hour. I was probably worth about 70. But today, if I was a young kid in high school, I couldn't get that job as a dishwasher because some 30-year-old Mexican man is going to have it, and he's going to work for less money than I would as a teenage boy. And so that's what's happening to our country, and we're having such pressure on the American worker across the board. And like we stated before, none of these issues are operating in isolation. They all operate collectively. You look at how the American economy has been destroyed by offshoring. That's downward pressure on wages for American workers. You look at the illegal aliens coming in here. It's more downward pressure on wages for Americans. And we have to stop these things. I don't have any grievance against the Mexican people. They just don't belong in my country. And our government's been lying to us about this. I mean, for at least 15 years, they've been saying that there's approximately 11 million illegals in this country.
Oh, Mike, you're breaking up something chronic there, mate. Megatron voice.
Saying that for 15 years. I hate when that happens. Hopefully this will be short-lived.
Yeah. They usually correct themselves out as like a little bit of a waveform, you know, and it'll reach a peak and then a trough, and then and you're back.
Okay, everything is digitized. But what I was saying there is that all of these issues are interrelated, and we have to solve them all. But the place for the Mexican people is not in the United States. The place for them is in Mexico. They're fleeing terrible conditions. And, you know, I have to blame a lot of the poverty and the plight of why Mexicans are coming into this country on NAFTA again, because NAFTA allowed so many of U.S. big agribusiness, the agri-corporations, to go down there, take over huge swaths of land and displace, you know, millions and millions of Mexicans so they could no longer make a living. So they're forced to migrate north into the U.S., and it's really the law of unintended consequences. And here we are, we're stuck with these people. They're a burden on our system. They're destroying our schools. They're overcrowding our hospitals. They're overcrowding our prisons. They contribute nothing to the system, and they need to go home. So I look at Obama, I look at Romney, and both of them are soft-stepping around this issue because they're the emerging demographic. They don't need to be the emerging demographic. They need to be repatriated to their own country. Reagan screwed this country over whenever he signed that first amnesty. And that amnesty was supposed to be for only 800,000 people. But 3.6 million people took advantage of it. And that set a precedent. I prefer the Eisenhower model, which Eisenhower had 1,200 immigration agents, and those 1,200 managed to deport 1.4 million illegal aliens who were in the country back in 1957 and send them home. And if it can be done by one, it can be done by another. We just simply have to have the political will to do it. The people of the United States have the political will, but the corporations like the cheap labor. They don't care about the American worker unless he's willing to work for the same or less than a Mexican will. And so that's all they care about is how do you get cheap labor. They don't care about the American people. They don't care about the country. They don't have a sense of nationalism, a sense of pride in their country. All they care about is the bottom line, the profit in their own pocket. And I think that's the wrong way to be. And I don't want to sound like I'm a socialist or some kind of egalitarian, because I'm not. I believe in enlightened self-interest. But I also think that if we're going to be a socialist country, that there's better models to follow than the communist model.
Well, communism takes away personal responsibility and private ownership. So if we were to attempt to impoverish the United States by sucking up all the wealth, buying out all the mortgages, I think we're well on our way to a socialist dictatorship.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. And I think that if we do nothing now, we're going to have to do a lot more later. And I will again refer people to what's going on in Greece, what's going on in Spain. And if you look at that, look at the entire Arab Spring, all of that. This is what people do when they're without hope and have nothing but despair to look forward to. They have nothing left to lose. And do we want that in this country? I certainly don't. I would like to see us take an intelligent approach to it, a proactive approach to it, address these issues head on, call them out, and be able to deal with them, you know, in a stand-up, you know, straightforward manner. Because if we don't, we're going to look at massive, massive civil unrest in this country, and that's when they're going to really implement the police state on the American people. And it's going to get ugly, folks, and there's going to be blood in the streets. I hate to say it, but this is my greatest fear right now.
There already is blood in the streets. Is there not? Aren't there people being murdered left, right, and center who are exposing all manners of corruption in the United States and being staged as suicides and people being kettled in protests and drones flying everywhere, millions of rounds of hollow point ammunition being ordered by the police departments, tens of thousands of dollars per department on new Glocks and goodness knows what else kind of SWAT team gear when they've had their own same revolver for the last 25 years and have never used it.
Well, that's what's happening, and these things are being funded by the federal government through grants from the Department of Homeland Security. And like I stated earlier, the current Secretary of Homeland Security, John Napolitano, hired Eric Mueller, who was head of the Stasi under East Germany, to help her structure her department. And you know, that's what the American people are going to be facing here very, very soon. We're going to have a East German-style police state. And that is an appalling state of affairs for me. I mean, I grew up in, I was born in the mid-50s, and I grew up with, you know, Andy of Mayberry, where the image of law enforcement was that of a peace officer, not that of a brutal thug, here to enforce laws that are neither fair nor wanted. And, you know, all of these things are problems, and we need to open our eyes up. We need to talk to our friends, talk to our neighbors, and we need to do something about it. And what that something is going to take, it's going to have a different form for every person, but every person has to engage in some form of resistance to this, because if you don't do it now, you're going to have to do it later.
Now, it's about ownership and caretaking, and I was just thinking about this. In New Zealand, we've got these two distinct cultures, or rather one of them is kind of being suppressed by the other. But they've got the Western culture that favors ownership, and you've got the native Maori culture, which favors caretaking of the land rather than owning it. And I think that the key to both of those societies, when they work well, like, for instance, every time somebody's bought a lake here in New Zealand, it's gone to crap. But every time a Maori tribe has been given caretaking authority over a lake, it has been kept absolutely pristine. The disconnect I feel here is a lack of responsibility to the land, to your country, and to your people. And it is responsibility, not ownership in itself, that is the main thing here that America has had destroyed. Because when you take away people's, safety nets, they suddenly have that, oh my God, I got a fire under my ass. I need to change something. But if you can easily go down to the unemployment office, if you can easily blame the gays, if you can easily blame the immigrants, if you can easily blame everybody else for problems that you are allowing to happen, you can sit there forever, safe in the knowledge that things can go all to hell around you and you can't, and you are not to blame. How freaking stupid and irresponsible can we get? Wake up, everybody. You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com
and AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Mike Harris is my guest.
The flight to New Zealand by plane from New York City takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they see, they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Oh, your dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. You want to know what it's like,
ladies and gentlemen,
you can experience going to
the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Very simple.
Broadcasting sit live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Fukushima irradiated too, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Mike Harris from Republic Broadcasting. And here was the other thing, the other sides of the illegal immigration story. One is how bad it is for the U.S. economy and the U.S. worker and all of these economic ramifications and social changes that happen. And the other thing is, why are they fleeing Mexico in such massive numbers? What the hell is so bad going on in Mexico that they feel that the United States is better? And the answer is huge corruption. Massive drug cartels all over the place, violence, disorder, etc., etc. I mean, most people are just living out their lives happily, but there's a lot more of an overt corruption going on there. Like you say, New Zealand is corrupt, and I can back up the evidence for that ad infinitum, but you can't bribe a New Zealand police officer on the street like you can in Mexico. Even though our corruption's just maybe just as bad, there's this veneer, okay, that is over the top, like a mask on the Phantom of the Opera, that prevents you from seeing the real dark underbelly sometimes in America and New Zealand and these other Western countries or alleged first world countries or whatever. Whereas in Mexico, it's far more overt. And I was wondering, do you know actually any more details on that, Mike, about the plight of the poor Mexicans?
Well, I can give you a lot of things, but let me give you a little background first on the corruption issue. And this is something you can notice globally, and it goes back to colonialism. Any place where the Brits colonized usually has a nice veneer of being a lawful place to be. It really is. You look at Singapore, you look at Australia, look at New Zealand, look at the U.S., Canada. Any place where Britain had a major role in the colonization was pretty good. Now you look at where Spain colonized, Mexico, South America, the Philippines. All of these places are the most corrupt cesspools you ever wanted to think of in your entire life. And I can't explain it, but there must be some cultural thing that the Spaniards did back in colonial days, because everywhere they set the Spanish flag down and claimed this for king and queen of Spain has turned out in our century to be among the most corrupt places on earth. That's one issue. The other thing, and I wrote an article on Veterans Today about this, it's called In Defense of the Mexican People. Because I wrote a previous article earlier about how our foreign policy with Mexico was a failed policy and needs to be revisited. Then I came back with one that says, you know, in defense of the Mexican people, NAFTA had such a devastating effect on rural agriculture in Mexico that it really, literally drove the people off of the land. And so that's why we have entire towns in Mexico that there's no men left. They've all left to come up north to go to work because they couldn't feed their families. Now, do I have compassion for them? Yes, I do. But I also have to say, you're not going to solve your problems hiding behind me. You have to go back to Mexico and you have to solve your own problems down there. And you look at it, we have 50 million illegal aliens in this country right now living here, you know, taking up residence, you know, essentially squatting in the U.S. With no legal right to be here. Can you imagine? Mexico has 113 million people. If those 50 million Mexicans would go back to Mexico en masse and demand structural change in how their governments are run, you think they'd get it?
Yeah, they would.
Do you think they'd have an effect on their government?
See,
that's what one of our propaganda initiatives has to be, is to inspire the Mexican people to go back home to their the, to They're nationalistic. They're patriotic. They love their people. They love their country. We have to convince them that it's possible for them to go back to Mexico and make the changes they want to see in their own government. To make
Also, there have been many revolutions throughout history that have been fostered and supported by neighboring countries that are free, that help them to be free, whether that be supplying intelligence or propaganda support or things of that nature, you know? Even if they went back all en masse, they still wouldn't be alone. Because whenever you settle anywhere, you always plant roots, and you will have friends, family, confidants, contacts, etc., that may in turn turn into some form of a supply line for your revolution, as it were.
Well, it appears that our Department of Justice, through the BATF, is arming the wrong people when they're arming the drug cartels. What do you think?
I think so. I think you should arm the average Mexican citizen. And as happens in every single time that you arm the citizenry, crime rates drop dramatically because criminals love unarmed victims.
Well, Mexico has some of the most stringent and draconian drug laws in North America. And if you're caught in possession of a weapon there, you can be imprisoned and or executed for it, depending on what your intent is. But I guess if you're a drug cartel big shot, and you can buy your way out of it, I guess that works too.
Mm-hmm. I presume you're familiar with John Lawton, Sheriff Richard Mack, and the whole more guns, less crime scenario.
And yes, I am.
What you find is that criminals don't obey gun ban laws, and as a direct result, all the law-abiding citizens who would never hurt anybody or pull their gun on anyone in violence unless they were threatened, basically, you wind up, by banning guns, giving almost the exclusive use of guns to criminals, both those in uniform and those who run cartels.
Well, that's a really good point there, because the criminals in uniform issue is getting more and more attention in this country, and the U.S. citizens are waking up to the abuse of process that our law enforcement in this country is going with. I mentioned earlier that, you know, back in the Andy Griffin days, when law enforcement, you know, sheriffs were police officers, they were peace officers. They're no longer peace officers. Most times they're brutal thugs. And with the advent of cell phone cameras and the like, we're recording more and more and more just unprovoked police violence against innocent people. And it's got to stop. It really does. And, otherwise, things are going to get much uglier here in the U.S. And I am not without hope. I still have faith in the American people, but I don't have faith in our government anymore. So we need a complete regime change in the USA, and I mean not just our government. The government needs to go. We need a new government, need all new elected officials, and we need a new bureaucracy to implement the laws that are on the books, because we've got plenty of laws. We have too many laws. In fact, I would propose a sunshine law, that every 10 years a law has to come up for review, and either if it doesn't pass review a second time, it gets put in the wastebasket. It's no longer valid. But we need to do something. We have so many laws on the books that nobody can follow all the laws. They can arrest anybody for anything, anytime. They just have to look for the right statute to violate.
Mm-hmm. And it's innocent until presumed. What was it? You're supposed to be presumed innocent until proven guilty,
yes.
But now you are assumed to be guilty until you prove your innocence. So, in essence, everybody's guilty in order to keep everybody safe. But if everybody's guilty, nobody's safe.
Well, that's another issue here, because you look at the illegal immigration problem we have. 99% of the illegal immigrants are from Mexico or other, Latin American countries. They operate under Napoleonic code, where they're guilty until proven innocent. So they come up here to the U.S., they're out drunk driving, they have a car accident. What do? They leave the scene. They don't stick around. They leave. If the United States still needs that type of labor, that low-skilled labor, if we need to have a guest worker problem, our program, let's follow the Singapore model. It's an excellent model. And that is where the employer can recruit as many foreign workers as he wants. but he has to feed them, he has to house them, he has to pay them. And if they go out and get in trouble, let's say drunk driving and have an accident, he's responsible for them. He doesn't stick the taxpayer with them. If they get injured, he's responsible for their medical bills, not going into an emergency room like they do here and stick the U.S. taxpayers for it. If they have children, he's responsible for educating their children. These are all common sense things where if you need that labor, fine, you can have it. But you have to take responsibility for that labor. You're not allowed to shift the burden of that responsibility onto the American taxpayers.
Or onto entirely the immigrants themselves, because moving to another area of the world where you don't have a social network or family members around to support you, that's becoming an essential part of life, and it's deeply integral to many cultures to have a huge family and have everybody supporting each other and helping each other, taking care of the kids. When you move to another country, you lose all that, and so you have to somehow replace it. And unless you're maybe like me, who can make friends in 5 minutes, you're going to be in real trouble. And if you fall on hard times, there'll be nothing to catch you other than, as you so put it, the taxpayer and the other people around you who wind up paying for you by default. That said, the specific non-enforcement of U.S. code on illegal immigrants, I find, is also another big problem. I think it's been reported that many police, even if they catch an illegal immigrant, with drugs or driving offences or simply being an illegal immigrant, the general shorthand is just let them go.
Well, a lot of times that happens because they know that these people don't have the financial wherewithal. And that's another thing that happens. You know, these illegals come up here, they're looking for the better life, and they're told a pack of lies. They think they're going to come up here and make the big bucks. But they'll get a job in a meat processing plant working 16 hours a day for less than minimum wage, and then they're charged room and board by the guy who hires them, and it's they're really abused. They really have the lowest amount of human rights that you can give them and keep them.
Hold on. You said that you hire them, you pay them, and then you make them pay to keep you alive, kind of thing. That sounds exactly like the process of human sex trafficking.
Well, it's very similar to that. And you look at these big companies, the big meatpacking plants. I'm not going to name names. I don't want to get sued. But anybody who goes to your grocery store and buys bacon, look at the label of it. And you know that they're hiring illegal labor in there and that these people are charged room and board to have a place to live when they're not at work. And they work them. The OSHA standards are non-existent. The health standards are non-existent. And it's really a life of exploitation for these people. But you know what? It's better than what they came from, so they're glad to do it. And so my premise is that how do we inspire the Mexican people to go back, to leave the USA and go back and reform their country in a way that makes it so people want to live there, so that they'd be proud to live there, that they can make a living, support their family. Like you said, they're taking big risks coming up here, and they seem all too happy to do it.
Well, the other thing about it is, as you talked about the meat works and what have you, enormous amounts of accidents happening in these facilities, and no compensation for the worker. They just go, you're an illegal immigrant. We got there, and this is the thing: you have no power to defend yourself and no access to justice if you're an illegal immigrant. That's why I'm against illegal immigration of any kind. Because that person becomes wide open to somebody standing over them and exploiting them. That is too dangerous. And, of course, you're giving inordinate amount of power to those employers who may or may not be ethical, moral, or open and transparent. And, indeed, there's been many reports of sexual exploitations of female migrants by higher-ranking workers in meat manufacturing plants and what have, and propositioning them for sex in the promise that they'll be able to keep their job. And if they turn them down, he calls immigration on them and threatens them if they don't.
Well, that's the nature of what's going on, and that's why this practice has to stop. And you really, you know, I can't solve Mexico's problems. I'm working on solving the problems of the U.S. by coming up with good ideas and trying to circulate these ideas via, you know, this forum on the radio and trying to get people to wake up and realize that there's things that they can do and how to do them. But I can't solve Mexico's problems. That's beyond my scope right now. But I would certainly like to see the people of Mexico go back home and solve their own problems, because I look at the U.S., this is my country. I mean, my family, we are not a nation of immigrants. Let me correct the misconception there. I am at least, I can document that my family has been in this country for at least 8 generations. I possess the records. I possess the handwritten records of my family Bible that go back to Missouri when they first settled there, back to 1808, right after the Louisiana Purchase. And if I believe what Ancestry.com tells me, my family's lived in here, this country, maybe 12 or 13 generations. So I'm not an immigrant. I'm Native American, born and bred, and I have no other country. I've known no other country. I mean, there's nothing else for me. This is it for me. And I've got to defend this territory. I've got to protect this. And, you know, I look at what's best for my country, what's best for my people. And that's what I have to concern myself with.
Well, I think it's the whole idea of being insular and not globalization. I think that is what we need to do in order to reverse this, don't you think? Because if you're going out trying to solve everybody else's problems that you're not familiar with, you wind up causing more harm than good. Rather, you just take a sit back and focus on what is going on here. Because if you can't support or protect yourself, how are you going to support or protect somebody else? You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break with Mike Harris. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'd like to take things very, very cool and very slick and very happy, kind of like an island in the sun called New Zealand. Stop by, have a cocktail, have a conversation. That's the format. I hope you enjoy it. And I hope my guest, Mike Harris, has enjoyed it thus far. How have you, Mike?
Well, Vinny, I think you've got a great show. I like your format. I like your way of going, so to speak.
I do it too. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, well, that's obvious. We're not doing this for the money, right?
Well, in fact, it's funny you should say that, because I was thinking about it over the break. That you actually once upon a time had some wealth and standing, and the month of work that I the last month of official work that I did, I think I got paid maybe $5,000 and plus a bonus of $11,900 worth of mall shopping vouchers, kind of thing, for a 45-day promotional period that I fulfilled. And I was just thinking about this. My income has dropped significantly, so it's all very well for somebody who hasn't got any money to begin with to say, I'm not doing it for the money. But to have wealth and do something for free, you're playing on a different battlefield altogether, and in my opinion, gives you a lot more credibility.
Well, let me talk to you about that, because I'm glad you brought it up, because that is a nettlesome issue. I'm one of these guys who got caught by NAFTA and GATT. That's why I'm so irked about them, is that my entire industry that I was a specialist in, I was very, very good at what I did. There were probably maybe 3 other guys in all of North America who were as good as what at my job as what I did. I worked in the semiconductor industry. There isn't a significant semiconductor industry in North America anymore. It's all been exported to China. And we in North America created this industry. We invented it. We created it. We developed it. It matured. And we turned around and gave the whole thing to China. And so I found myself in a position where I went from making, six, sometimes 7 figures a year down to making, 5, and talk about taking a haircut. And there was a time in my life when I thought that I made the money I made because I was smart, I was aggressive, I was industrious, you know, I worked hard, I was really a hardworking guy. I thought that was responsible for my success. That was contributors to my success. But the platform that, all of that rested on was taken away when the semiconductor business was exported. And this was not a low-tech business. This is high-tech as it gets. And, you know, they exported that to China, too. So why did we do this? Why are we doing these things to shoot ourselves in the foot and give away our entire industrial base? As you and I said on one of the earlier breaks, the United States should be lucky if you could if we knew how to make a hammer here anymore, because we've dismantled it, and it's hard to reconstruct those things once they're gone. But I believe in this country, and I think that we can do it. I think that we can bring industry back here. And there's good news in this, too. The good news is that all of the legacy business is gone, so that we can start with new state-of-the-art and really create new innovative industrial systems in this country. And when we do have our renaissance, which I believe we will, it's going to be stellar. Watch out. China better watch out, because we're going to be breathing fire down their neck.
Is that something you would prefer to see? Look at it like this. It's so much easier to destroy something than it is to build it, right? And it's been destroyed, so it must take a long time, I would feel, and a lot of input in order to rebuild America to its aforementioned former glory, don't you think?
Well, first of all, I don't think we can get our former glory. I think there will be a new glory for us, and it's going to take a different form, a different shape. But I'm a builder. That's what I do. I create businesses. I've started probably 7 businesses in my life, and 4 of them were extremely successful, and 1 of them was an unmitigated failure. But that's what makes it human. You don't know what it's like to win until you've had to lose. And I believe in this country. I believe in our people. I believe that we have the most industrious people in the world. But I think there's some fundamental policies we need to change, and we need to stop babying. We need to stop trying for equal results. We need to allow those who have capabilities to achieve the highest they can based on the merit.
There are 10 minutes remaining in this conference.
Okay, I just heard that.
I don't know what the heck that was from. We do not do that on American Freedom Radio, I can assure you. That sounds like a blog talk radio thing.
Well, anyway, I think that our best days are ahead of us, but we've got to take care of some housekeeping items now. We need a regime change in this country. We've got a criminal cabal that is running the show. There's probably 10 or 12,000 people in this country right now that if they were removed or expelled from the country somehow, this country would take off again like a wildfire, because we've got some.
In the U.S. court system, once you're indicted for a crime, are you able to be, let's say you're in an official position that you're a judge and you're indicted, obviously you can't keep doing your job. You'll have a stand down period or an indefinite suspension until the investigation is carried out. So in essence, what I was just thinking now is, what if these people, these 10 or 12,000 that you said, were indicted simultaneously and all of their officers went on suspension and would have to have interim or replacement guys put into those positions whilst the investigation is, once the results of the investigation come out, if they get proven to be corrupt, they go to jail. If they've been proven to do nothing wrong, then they go straight back to their position and replace their steward, as it were.
Well, at the risk of creating sounding treasonous or sedition, I think we need to develop a parallel government that operates independently of what our government that's in place now does, but operates under original organic constitutional law and under the common law of the U.S. And I think we need to take authority from the people and go out and hunt these criminals down, hunt them down like dogs in the street and hang them if we need to. Because we've got people who have damaged this country irreparably, and they need to be brought to brought to task on it, and it's time. And nothing would make me happier than to see some of these criminals hung in the Washington Mall on a Sunday at noon, just televised for the whole nation to see, to show them how we treat these criminals. By the other hand, we need to show some leniency to some of the lesser people who've got goods on them, who can indict these people, who can help us with the prosecutions. I don't want the small fish. I want the big fish. I want the masterminds behind this. I want the really corrupt SOBs out there who've taken this country and really brought us down. And one thing that could happen, if either candidate, Obama or Romney, wanted to assure victory in this election, they could do one thing, and that would be to promise and begin an investigation of what really happened on 9/11. Because until we solve that, and until these people are brought to justice, there will be no justice, and this will not improve. But if Obama gets in trouble in this election, I think he might. You know, Romney looked pretty good last night. But I know Romney is corrupt. I know he's a crook. And if Obama really wanted to win this thing, all he would have to do was commit and take the preliminary actions to begin a true, honest investigation, free of outside influence, find out what really happened at 9/11, and bring those perpetrators to justice.
Mm-hmm. And I found that these commissions, like the 9/11 Commission, get report. The people that get they put to head them are usually the most corrupt people. Have shown that they can be trusted to be corrupt. Like the Warren Commission was headed by Alan Dulles. And just a New Zealand thing here. Have you heard about the arrest of Kim.com, the alleged massive hacking pirate guy? Well, guess who's now going to be in charge of the investigation into his ordeal, which is shown to be New Zealand intelligence services going up. The same guy who's doing the investigation into this big toxic oil spill last year called the Rena that happened off the coast of New Zealand, our worst maritime disaster in history, where they started spraying Corexit instantly and took their sweet fracking time cleaning that puppy up. So, you know, it's the same system everywhere.
Well, you know what the way around that is you buy random. You draw people out of the phone book, for Christ's sakes, to sit on the commission. Because, you know, I don't care who the person is. They've got a brain. They're able to use it. If the evidence is presented convincingly, pick them at random. I mean, like they do jury duty. Pick one person from every state. Get 50 people in a room and say, look, here's the evidence. This is how it's going to be presented. And let the prosecution present it. And let the chips fall where they may. And if these people are found guilty, we take them out and hang them.
This is what should be done, because that sounds like justice. If you are orchestrating murders, if you're orchestrating huge drug shipments, if you are orchestrating the destruction of the economy, and if you are planning to exterminate mankind, it seems only right and just that you be caught, tried by a free jury with no influence standing over them, be found guilty of your crimes based on the evidence alone, and receive your punishment. It seems like justice to me.
I couldn't agree more. And if we have to pick them out of the phone book or out of the jury duty pool, that's where we pick them from. But we get intelligent American people who are honest and can't be influenced, and let them make the decision as to what really happened. Put together a report. Let us know.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Mike. And you can check out more of Mike's work on republicbroadcasting.org and at Veterans Today. We'll have the links up at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com archives. Thank you very much, Mike, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. And we will see you again sometime, assuredly.
Well, Vinnie, thank you so much for having me, and it's my pleasure. I'll invite you on my show next time.
All right. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, bye-bye.